Welcome to the Trend Detection Podcast, powered by Siemens. And now your host, Niall Sullivan.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Trend Detection Podcast. We've got a slightly different slightly different episode today, because for the main reason is we've got an external expert and industry influencer, I'm going to describe him as, on the podcast today, which is really exciting. We're going to talk about digital transformation, actually what in the art of the possible. I know digital transformation is a very broad topic. We're going to sort of dive deep into some really cool areas. But I guess before we do, I'll hand over to Kevin to introduce himself. So over to you, Kevin.
Hey, thanks for having me. So my name is Kevin O'Donovan. I'm a technology evangelist. And I spend my time working with companies, big and small, I suppose, looking at the art of the possible when it comes to new technologies. Where is digitalization taking us in 2024 and beyond? But also working with them to kind of understand, well, what does it mean for them? You know, how do you bring this back to reality in terms of, great, we can do that in the future, but what does it mean for me today? How does this work for me? So I've always been in enterprise technology sales with Compaq, HP, Intel. So I'm a strong believer that technology will help us get out of some of the fun and games we have today.
No, exactly. I guess on that note, you were recently at Hannover Messe as well, which I guess is a big industry event for us all. What was your sort of takeaways from that, first of all, on a sort of a side note to all this?
Well, so Hannover Messe was as big and chaotic as ever. I suppose what was fascinating to see was that there was a huge drive right across all the halls in terms of digitalization. It's the only show in town, right? And obviously everything to do with AI, generative AI, co-pilots was kind of talk of the town, and everything from it's going to be brilliant to it's going to take all our jobs. But I suppose some of the underlying conversations and themes that were there was around, well, regardless of the industry and regardless of what you're making or looking to do, we have a skill shortage. So how can things like digitalization, generative AI, how can that free up some of our time? Because we just don't have the people. And that's not just a Europe problem, that's everywhere. And given the pace of change in today's world, be that technology, be that geopolitics, be that supply chain shocks, you name it, how can we be more resilient? How can we adapt and change things faster? So a lot of that was kind of playing into, okay, well, how can technology help us address that? Not the other, it's not that we're, you know, the technology is going to change. We're not sure what, why. It's not technology for technology's sake. But certainly everything AI was kind of the hot topic. And robotics, you know, there's a robot for everything now.
Exactly. And actually, that's an interesting theme to start with, I guess. You said about technology for technology's sake. And we often talk about on here about, you know, don't just implement technology unless you're, you know, fully, you know what a business issue or business problem you're trying to solve. And you mentioned one there about the skill shortage and knowledge, you know, capture and that side of things. So that's where it might be a good place to start, maybe.
Well, I think we said at the start, we've been talking about digital transformation for, I don't know, how many generations at this stage. And to be honest, as long as us humans keep inventing something, or maybe the AI will start inventing things for us now as well, this is a never-ending story. It's a destination that we're always kind of heading towards, but we'd probably never get there because somebody will come up with a new technology or a new way of doing things or something we never saw before. Like, look at the advances we've seen in digital technology in the past 20, 30 years. So who knows where it's headed. But I suppose fundamentally, any digital technology, it's simply a tool for us to use. And I think the biggest challenge is that, you know, to your point, is that, well, you know, everybody is probably sick of salespeople calling them going, well, here's the latest and greatest new something else, gadget, widget, robot, software, something. But it's back to, well, this is a really cool piece of technology, but how can I use that in my company today? What problem does it solve? And to be honest, how does it change my workflow? Because I think one of the biggest challenges I've always seen with technology is people go, you know, it's a shiny toy. It's like, oh, this is really cool. But like whatever industry you're in, we have established workflows and how things work. Now, that does not mean that those workflows shouldn't change and evolve and over time. But I often see people kind of going, well, we have this workflow. We're taking this new technology. We're going to kind of, nail this new technology, not change the workflow, and then be surprised when, well, we didn't get the value or we didn't get the whatever. So I think people don't game out the implications of technology, positive and negative, in terms of their workflows and in terms of the human nature reaction to change. And, you know, I think we've all been in companies where it's like, we got to change. Absolutely. We all have to change. I'm fine. It's everyone else needs to change. And then you get into the cultural aspects. But I suppose we also talk about the pace of digital transformation. But I've been in this business for, 30 years. If you look at what the likes of NVIDIA, Intel, AMD, the guys who manufacture the silicon, TSMC, SMC, and. If you look at the technology advances that they're going through right now, the amount of compute power that we now have, be it that for the cloud, the data center, edge computing, the changes in comms, the ability to do a lot more out of the edge. You know, we're kind of completely redefining edge computing. The different types of technologies we have to have a more immersive experience, be that displays, 3D models, VR, AR, XR, whatever space, whatever word you want to use for it. The amount of these technologies, and they're kind of coming together in a way that's allowing us to, it's not just one technology changes, it's kind of that perfect storm. Now, people have heard this story before, but I do believe that we're at a point in time where a lot of this stuff is starting to come together. And then, of course, we throw in the new flavor of the month, generative AI. So the digital, the art of the possible is getting fascinating to see what you can do. But again, it comes back to, well, how does that make sense for your company, your business, and what are the implications? And I think the biggest challenge there is many folks need to be honest with themselves as to, well, where are they today with their digital transformation? How good is their quality of data? What skills do they have? What skills will they need? And really being kind of honest with themselves as to, well, if we move forward, what will need to change?
I actually wrote down a word here. Adaptability seems to be important here, both in terms of, like you said, it's interesting what you're saying about digital transformation roadmap, because you know, you hear that phrase a lot, but it is almost like a never-ending journey, and there's so many things that can change and happen, things that we don't even know about could happen in, you know, a few years' time, whether external factors or internal factors. So how important is that, sort of adapting to changes both within an organization and also those external factors, which no one has control over, of course.
So this was my personal opinion. In the ideal world, we'd be able to adapt, or your company or your process would be able to adapt to whatever you throw at it. But like it's unrealistic to try and plan for everything and game everything out. Like who saw the Russian invasion of Ukraine coming, right? And the implications for these kind of things. But I think one of the other themes coming out of Hannover Messe was around the batch size of one. You know, today in manufacturing, we make one thing. We just make millions of them, and that's how we're profitable. Make them as repeatable as possible. But then you get into over the last 10, 15 years, lots more. I want a customized product. So how do I customize that without building a brand new production line and whatever? So like the world we're heading at, and a lot of the technologies and presentations I saw at Hannover Messe was about the fact that, well, we need to be able to adapt. So if the customer asks for something slightly different, how fast can we reply to them and say we can make it without having to reconfigure the entire factory and whatever? So how do you do that? All the digital twins and the robots and pre-configure and reconfigure. But also what implications does that have in my supply chain? Do I need to change suppliers? Do I need to get something from someone else? What skills do I need? Now, you can probably sit down with folks like me, or consultants, whatever you want to call us, and you can spend the next 50 years gaming out all the potential what-ifs And to be honest, you just get to analysis paralysis, as they call it, right? You can't game out everything, but you have to be able to game out change is going to happen. So if these change, you know, what are the ones that are going to most affect us? And then how will digitalization help us in that? How, if we do invest a bit more in cleaning up our data, how can generative AI help us to reconfigure something or watch for predictive maintenance or be able to react faster than we've done in the past? And I think then this is back to your point earlier, is that nobody should be going off investing in new technology just for the hell of it. It's got to be a business reason. So how can we do more with less? Is that less resources, less time, less effort on our people? And it's not necessarily about, oh, we're going to fire half the people because we don't need them. It's freeing up time from people that could be better off doing more productive things in their day job and getting rid of some of the mundane tasks. So how can we actually just make things more efficient, do more with less, but then be able to respond to whatever curveball we get within reason? When someone says, well, I need my supplier wants something different, my customer wants something different. It can't just be a special project team being spun up from nowhere to run for 6 months because you need an answer faster.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I was just thinking as well, because it's important, because we're talking about customers and thinking about their own digital transformation and on that side of things. But what sort of responsibilities on the vendor side, you know, to support this and be adaptable at the same time? You sort of gave an example there of, you know, we need something built now. Kind of is one example, but there are others you could, you know, point to.
Well, I suppose the biggest change I've seen in the industry in the last probably 5 or 6 years, we always talk about ecosystems and we always talk about openness and whatever. But like the new buzzword with AI was it's a team sport. Or the energy transition, it's a team. Nobody can do it all. And granted, you have big players and smaller players and whatever, but it's nobody can do it all. And we need to be able to be a bit more open. Now, whether that's true open APIs, software as a service models, I got to be able to adapt. So it's not that each company is vertically integrated and, you know, you have to have all of my stuff before you can do whatever. It's mix and match more and more and more. So I think one of the big changes I'm seeing is companies are, you know, they're being asked by their customers that, look, I it can't be a lock-in. I got to be able to mix and match. And the drive towards as a service models where I might just pay monthly. And if I don't like you, I might be able to change. You know, that changes the paradigm completely as to, well, you built your factory 100% on my stuff. So, well, I'm the sales guy. Yeah, that's been locked in for 10 years. job done. So that world's changing. So I think that's another fundamental thing that people are saying, well, you may not have all the answers. I might need to go to someone else. So how can you work with other people? How can you prove that to me? Now, that's easy to say, hard to do, right? We still work in the laws of physics and data standards and quality of data and security, privacy. Not everything goes to the cloud, right? I think one of the fascinating things as well at Hannover Messe was the concept of when we talk about generative AI, it's not all about big, large language models in the sky. It's about small language models that are sitting in your factory. It's your, the model comes to the data. The data doesn't go to the big cloud in the sky. So that ability to be able to mix and match, I think that's as vendors, you know, hey, look, I've been in the industry long enough. Everybody was like, well, we all support standards, but mine has go faster stripes that makes it better than yours because I have something that's non-standard, but it's better. So you need to buy my stuff. I think customers are getting a bit wise to some of that stuff right now.
Yeah, so it's this idea of like a technology ecosystem. And I was trying to think of a phrase. There's a phrase Gartner uses, which it's almost like it's like composition of different technologies. And I know that's been, I've forgotten the phrase, but it's been sort of circular for the past sort of year or two. But it's that idea that vendors and software, they come together and for the greater good, obviously, of the customer. And they're not just sort of pushing their own agenda, because in the end, we all, without, I guess, if we all sort of work together on this to deliver value for the customer.
Agreed, but I suppose in the ideal world, wouldn't it be great if we all we reduced the amount of standards that were there, and we all worked in the same standards, and everything operated with everybody else and whatever. A, that's hard to do, and B, we still live in a world where it's, well, I need to make more money than, or, well, I need to make enough money to keep my company alive. And sometimes that's, I have my secret sauce, and my secret sauce may mean that it's, lock in is probably the wrong word, but depending on what side of the fence you're on, you're saying, well, I am locked in. You could call it competitive advantage. Because we've seen in different industries where you say, if somebody mandates from top down, well, this is the minimum standard. It's, I wouldn't say it's a race to the bottom, but you do kind of stifle some innovation because everybody has to be the same. You know, that's been proven not to work either. So we do need innovation. We do need companies to come up with new ideas, but at the same time, it can't be a black box that, you know, just trust me. You don't need to know how it works. Just buy our stuff and you'll be grand. That doesn't work anymore. So it's that, hey, you have your secret sauce. You have your competitive advantage. We're paying you for that, but you also need to be able to show us how you got to that, you know, the explainable AI or whatever you want to call it. Plus, I want to be able to hook something else into this because my business has changed, or you're not the only show in town. So how open are you? What does that really mean? How can I exchange data securely and easily, that it doesn't take me, whatever, millions of dollars to try and get that to work? Again, all this stuff sounds easy, but when you see what's going on with some of the standards committee, you know, there will be less standards, right? We've seen that in every industry. And that takes time and effort. And a lot of, you know, everybody wants less standards as long as it's my standard is selected. So human nature plays in there as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you mentioned a word there, sort of innovation. And of course, with, you know, it's great having, you know, really big, bold ideas for digital transformation. But I guess, you know, you get to businesses, or maybe it's not just large businesses, or businesses of all sides have to measure that against risk. I mean, what's your experience of, you know, companies balancing those two things, pushing forward, but also thinking about, oh, you know, is this right for me at the right time? That kind of thing.
To be honest, yes, it has to be done because there's no point in here's the art of the possible and we're going to invest everything and hopefully we'll get there. Yeah, you have to balance the risks. But I suppose in each industry, in each segment of industry, in each company, what might be a risk for your company may not be a risk for mine. I might have a different risk profile. And that could be anything in terms of the technology I use, where I'm located, the staff I have, the skills I have available, and. So I'm a big believer in again, it's not just technology for technology's sake. You have to, for your own business, have someone come up with, here's the risk reward. And then it comes down to a business value judgment as to, is this risk worth taking? You know, what's going to happen if we don't take it and game that out. But I think the biggest challenge for most companies, and again, this is easy for me to say from the outside looking in, is that sometimes people need to be honest with themselves. I've seen so many digitalization projects where they didn't work out as planned because it turned out that the data that they were building it on, the data wasn't very good. But during the entire project lifecycle, when it was being done, was like, no, our data is really good. And maybe they didn't know, right? And then when you started joining all the dots and, you know, it's like training your AI on the company data. If the data you have isn't great, your AI is probably not going to be great. So I think you need to be honest. Or how adaptive are we to change? What's our culture like? When I was back in Intel, we used to have a strategic planning framework and we used to call it was a Professor Bugelman had come up with a strategic planning framework. But cut a long story short, we used to call it the rubber band model. And it was like, well, what do we say we do? And what do we actually do? And what skills do we have? And what skills do we need? And to be quite honest, sometimes you'll ask a company, well, what skills do you have? And what do you need? And then when you dig in, they may not have all of the ones that you think.
No, exactly. You mentioned skills as well. Is there... And you met, well, we met, we talked about, you know, just resources, I guess, but is there sort of skills, you know, missing maybe to, you know, to enable sort of successful digital transformation? Are we in that sort of state at the moment?
My personal opinion, there'll always be skills missing. Because the skills we all have today might be different tomorrow because we don't know, you know, look at Gen AI and what's coming and how do I use it? What will I use it for? And. So it's not a question of will I have, you have to accept that there are skills missing. It's then a question of, well, how do I compensate? How do I reskill, upskill? Can I get around that? But it's also not, let's, you know, it's back to the art of the possible. Could you train anybody to do anything? You probably could. It just depends on how much time, effort, money, and willingness that they are able to do it. So you have to, again, be honest and say, look, we do need different skill sets, but we have to keep the ones we have as well. So how do we transition to that? Is that hiring new people? Is it upskilling, reskilling? How long is that going to take? And again, this is kind of the dose of reality. You can typically look at a company and kind of go, well, what have you tried to change in terms of skills before? How did that go? What was the result and why? And if you're expecting a different outcome the next time around, because it says in a PowerPoint slide, we're all just going to learn this, explain to me. I use a stupid example. During COVID, we all suddenly went online. Teams, Zoom, WebEx, whatever. Pick a favorite tool. How many people in all the companies that we all know went through proper detailed training on how to use Teams or Zoom and all the cool whiteboard and raise your hand and emotions and whatever? Who went through all the training to actually use that properly? Right? To me, it's digital transformation. We went to a digital way of having meetings. And yet a lot of people don't use it very efficiently. And then they blame the technology. Oh, the online meetings aren't very good. because they didn't, personally, some people didn't invest time and effort in actually the etiquette, how to use it, and they could be far more productive. So if I turn around to you and say, you need to go to the industrial metaverse and you need the latest and greatest in predictive maintenance and bring all the digital twin silos together and throw in Gen AI and edge computing, we'll have a bit of quantum coming down the line in a couple of years. Sounds wonderful, but if the culture in the company is that, well, we don't even use Teams very well, I'll be kind of asking, going, how do you think all this is going to suddenly get better? Does that make sense?
No, it does make perfect sense. I've never really thought about, you know, that shift to Teams and online being digital transformation, but of course it is. It's almost like the prime example of digital transformation where, you know, in a lot of cases, some may have already had, you know, some element of online in place, but, you know, a vast majority have had to make serious changes there. So that's a really good example.
Well, a thing I've seen with many companies, you would say, okay, when you move to online collaboration during COVID, suddenly the concept, and again, it depends on the company. Some will be way ahead and some people will, whatever. Some companies will have not, we've gone to SharePoint or Dropbox or something, Google Docs, and we have one version of the truth. We have one version of the document. Everybody works off the same document. We have built up the etiquette workflow that we work on the same document and we see who's editing what and we can do version control and whatever. You can do all these things with whatever. And then there are other companies that's like, well, I'll download the document, I'll work on it myself, and then I'll upload it. But then there's 20 people uploading and downloading the same, and version control flies out the window. And you see some companies, and when they're online and they're doing a presentation or they're doing whatever, they're working off one document and everyone has access to it and they all know how to do it and it's set up, whatever. And then some others don't. And sometimes they're not as efficient. So to me is that the technology is the same, but you're not using it the same way, or you haven't invested time in figuring out how to use it the best way. And what you also haven't, some haven't changed is their workflow. Because some people will say, you send me the file, I'll edit it, I'll send it back to you. That's a workflow. Whereas if I say to you, no, you go online, you edit it, it'll all be tagged, version control, whatever. That's a different workflow. But if people don't adapt to that new workflow, you're still, you have the same workflow, new technology, God, this isn't very good. And this is where I kind of start, again, it's easy for me from outside looking in, kind of looking at people and going, hang on a second now, you're going to do all this in 12 months and how's your document management like today? What's all email? We run on spread. We run on Excel. Okay. You probably need to think about what cultural change and what workflows will need to change as you migrate as well. Now I'm being, what would you say, a bit provocative and a bit simplistic, right? It's not that easy, and people aren't. There's a lot of digitalization happening, but at the same time, it's too easy for people to go, "Oh, it's the technology's fault." It's rarely the technology's fault. It's how we do change management and change the workflow. And I think this is where Gen AI, predictive maintenance, automation. This is where all those workflow, you know, the amount of people that take an existing workflow, throw technology at it and expect everything to be working properly. No, you got to change the workflows as well. Otherwise, it's going to be tough.
Yeah. And actually, you mentioned predictive maintenance and tell you with Sensei, I think that's something we've learned over the years as well, but it's not a technology thing. The change management piece is absolutely crucial to the success of these projects, and actually we're, you know, enhancing workflows, fitting into existing workflows, not, you know, ripping everything out and putting, you know, a new product in. It's about how it can, and the way it's been described to me before by one of our customers I interviewed a year or two ago, he sort of described Sensei as like a tool in his toolbox kind of thing that you know, amongst other different things. And that's sort of how I guess most technology players probably want to be the main, you know, the centerpiece. But how realistic is that, you know, in a world, especially with larger companies with so many different processes, systems and stuff, you can't be the centerpiece. And it's that what we talked about before, it's like an ecosystem, isn't it? You're part of the overall ecosystem delivering value to the customer.
Agreed. You know, I do a lot of work within the energy industry, and obviously the energy transition is the big game in town there, right? So everything from renewables and less carbon emissions and sustainability and circular and. You know, if you're off building a new wind farm, or you're building a hydrogen plant, or you're building a battery gigafactory, in some ways you have it easy because it's new build. And you can then take a lot of the new technologies, and digital twins and design and reality capture and virtual commissioning and whatever. And because you have the opportunity to kind of build a new workflow for a new build, no legacy, away you go. Now you'll still have, let's say, ways of doing things in an industry. So you'll have those kind of traditional workflows, and you have to work with your suppliers and regulation and compliance and that. But in some ways you can kind of change things around and have the best of both worlds. But the challenge is that's fine if you're building a new gigafactory, but most manufacturing doesn't. It's brownfield, right? We have existing stuff that's there for maybe decades. And that's a bit more challenging. And we have ways of working. And it may just not just our company, it might be the industry. But like the things where I think it's fascinating to watch is things like Gaia X in the auto industry, in terms of how they're sharing data on carbon footprint. Now you could say is that mandated from tops down? That's forcing an entire industry to change. But that's kind of the level where things have to go, where it's not just one company or a new standard. It's kind of seen as the industry comes together and go, look, we have to get this. We have to reduce complexity. We have to have data standards that are interoperable. We all have to talk about the same thing. And we need some way of sharing the data that we don't all have to write new connectors and how you calculate CO2 and I calculate two different things, and then it's oranges and apples. So that consistency in some ways is driven by government, regulations, compliance, sometimes driven by an industry itself saying, look, with digital transformation, we just got to simplify things and I'll speak the same language. Now, again, this takes time. If you look at what I call it, when I was growing up, depending on where you went in the world, you needed a different mobile phone because we had completely different mobile phone standards. What worked in the US wouldn't work in Europe. Now, roll forward 20 years and hey, it's 5G. So it's possible to do, but it takes time and effort, right? And there's a lot of companies that were big companies 20 years ago and then they're not around anymore, right? But that's just the way, that's back to innovation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you're right, that pace of change, even for, and we haven't talked about the difference between sort of like SMEs, I guess, and large enterprises, like how, because even, like you said, even some of the larger enterprises have sort of, some have fallen by the wayside. So you can't just presume it's a big company can move, you know, can accelerate faster on this, or, you know, because I guess sometimes they even maybe ignore the warnings, I'm going to say, you know, if they need to move, you know, move with the times and move with technology and adapt the culture, and it just fails for some reason. Is there any sort of thoughts you can give around that? Why that doesn't take off?
So I think what's fascinating, and again at Hannover Messe, the German, the BDI, the industry, German Industry Association, had a couple of workshops, and they were talking about how technology and the industrial metaverse in this case was a strategic advantage for small and medium businesses. And what I mean by that is, so certainly people will look at the big companies or the big players and go, well, it's easy for them. They can kind of make a market or set the market, and they'll define what this is what I need, this is what it's going to be. And there's a bit of that. But there's also the concept of the bigger the company, the bigger the oil tanker, and it takes a lot more time to turn the oil tanker than a smaller company, right? So again, that normally plays out. Bigger company, harder to change. Smaller companies, I can change faster. I don't have some of the inertia built in. But many companies would say, well, I'm small, medium business. If you look at what the big guys are using, and the software and the IT departments and the training and the yada, yada, yada. Sure, like they're spending gazillions and we're only a small guy. I think what's also happened in the past couple of years, when we look at cloud and as a service, software as a service, something as a service, the barrier to entry has come way down. I don't need to build my own data center and install my own SAP system or my own CRM system or run my own knowledge management system. I and again, within privacy and security and data compliance laws I can now pay for this with a credit card once a month per user. So I have access to this data. I have access to AI. I don't need to build my own water-cooled data center to be able to use the latest NVIDIA stuff. I still need to pay something. So the barrier to entry, so that I think that levels the playing pitch as well with a lot more of the small and medium folks. Now, again, they'll be part of the ecosystem. So if someone says, this is how you transfer the data, this is the data schema, that's an industry standard supplier setup. But I do believe that big companies have advantages and disadvantages. Small companies have advantages and disadvantages. But I think the playing field has leveled a bit. So for small, medium businesses, you can now have access to the same 3D design tools, the same simulation tools. You throw in Gen AI, it's giving you new skills that you don't necessarily have to hire or learn. So I think we're just starting out with this, like some of the stuff with co-pilots. Or look at predictive maintenance, right? Years ago, it was like you kind of built that in-house. Now you can kind of buy the models or buy the software packages, right? Whatever you want, machine learning or whatever. And suddenly you can do predictive maintenance, and you don't have to have 10 PhDs on staff in a small company to figure it out in the first place. So I think, as I say, technology, it's not the answer to all questions, but it's a tool. And I think it's lowering the barrier, especially for small, medium business. Doesn't make it mean it's easy, but we've never had the opportunity to have access to so much technology for so many before.
No, exactly. That's a really good point. And just on that latter point, I guess you mentioned about, and I recorded an episode recently about this sort of build versus buy debate. I mean, what's your sort of view on that, Kevin, on where that sits and where, you know, we're moving more towards buy, or is there still a bit of a culture shift required to get there fully, maybe?
I suppose it's a bit of both. And again, it comes back down to the company and the culture. Like I grew up in an environment where if you were a company and you wanted to, okay, we need to expand our cybersecurity, or we want to do data analytics or whatever. The thing was, well, we have our own data center. So I have to buy a software package to support that. I need someone to be able to run that. So I need an administrator. I didn't need people to actually use it. So I need to hire data scientists. It was kind of like, oh, I have to build it myself. That was the only game in town. And yet while we were doing all that with IT technology, everybody was outsourcing manufacturing to somewhere else on the planet because it's cheaper. And now that's coming back full circle with onshoring, nearshoring, and whatever. Some people turned around and said, I suppose an example I saw in my Intel days, we had our own CRM system. It wasn't great now. And somewhere along the line, someone said, you know what? Have you heard of Salesforce? We'll use Salesforce and we'll take it off the shelf. No, we'll customize Exabit, but we'll take it off the shelf. Rather than up to that before, we had teams of people who built our own CRM. And they weren't bad people. They're good, whatever. But it's like, if you want best in class, can we focus on, you know, what are your company's core competencies? And we've seen it with cloud. When I was 15 years ago, 20 years ago, talking about cloud, most people would say, Kev, over my dead body, are we ever putting anything in the cloud? Never going to happen. I've got a huge budget, my CapEx budget. I'm building my own data centers. I've 1,000 people on staff. Go away. Now look at where we are, where it's quite feasible to outsource that to, again, within GDPR and privacy and data regulations, and where's the data stored and has to be within my country or the EU, whatever, right? So we can, technology, you can fix all that. So I think more and more people are kind of going, we buy what we need to be competitive. We still need to understand what's our secret sauce? What is, what makes us ultimately profitable and what's our intellectual property and our how do we make money better than anyone else? But I think the day is gone when companies kind of go, well, if we need an extra pillar, we have to build it ourselves. If that's not a core competence, let's just take it as a service, take it as we need it. Because it's also impossible. Like you see with cybersecurity, everybody wanted their own cybersecurity people. There isn't enough cybersecurity people on the planet that everyone can hire their own. And then do you have the good guys or the bad guys? You know, I think it's back to the people have to be honest with themselves. What's our core competency? Where can we bring real value? Or otherwise, are we just doing busy work and trying to keep up with someone else where it's not our core competence? But that, look, that's a tough question around the boardroom for some people, right?
Yeah, exactly. And again, when you say about, you know, sort of resources and that kind of thing being tough at the moment in terms of where to allocate resources, and that's another decision to be made, isn't it? Because if you can outsource with all this great new technology you said coming through as well, if you can utilize some of that while also utilizing the strengths of your organization, your teams, and obviously that has to be like an individual basis. There's no sort of like builds the best or buys the best. It's certainly not as black or white as that, is it?
No. As we're recording this in a week's time, I'm involved in a Siemens AI with Purpose Summit. I'm hosting a session there on the great data standoff, why companies won't share data with each other. Now, you say, well, what data? Obviously, if I'm designing, I don't know, a new computer mouse, I'm probably not going to share that with all my competitors if I have a new cool idea that I think is going to sell millions. That's intellectual property. But the data from my factory floor with the machines and the all the motors and, can I share that data? Well, you'd say, why not? And then we can all do better predictive maintenance with a bigger sample size and. But someone might turn around and say, well, actually, it's not necessarily intellectual property, but our secret sauce is the way we've configured our production line, the workflow. And we're not sure if anyone can figure out how we've done it if we just give them the data, but maybe they could. So I'm going to wait a while and not going to share that data. So I think there's a lot of that going on as well. But and then we go, well, supposing someone throws an AI at it, maybe they will figure out how we've reduced our production cycle by 3 days. And then that's our secret sauce. That's our competitive advantage. So I think there's a bit of that going on. This is why I keep going, it'll be the small language models. Bring the model to me, I'll keep my data. I may start sharing more things because there might be some incentives and stuff. But again, it's not all going to the big model in the sky and then everyone gets eaten by someone else.
No, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. So we're coming, I guess, towards the end of our conversation. It's been really fascinating. I feel like we've covered quite a lot. I guess just to sort of so we come full circle, two questions to finish on, actually. So is that usual crystal ball sort of question about where things will be in 5 years' time, which you can't really answer, but you might have some feelings. And then it's also, I guess, just, and I do this quite a lot, you know, whatever the topic we're talking about, but just sort of summarising some key takeaways for people to think about if they're just, and like I said, it's maybe difficult to give a broad advice about digital transformation journeys because you could be at this side, this far in or not, but maybe some just general advice about digital transformation as well.
So I suppose the first one, in terms of where are we going to be in 5 years' time? God, I wish I knew. if I did, I probably wouldn't tell you. I'd have invested in X, Y, and Z already and now be retired and be a gazillionaire. So my crystal ball is no better than yours. I think we keep talking about digitalization and the pace of technology. And as I say, I've been in this game for 30 years. I have never seen the disruptive effect that AI, generative AI. And again, some people say AI has been around for years. Yes, machine learning and that. But just the way it's kind of the last 12 months, the way it's been used in different workflows. And everyone is, it's obviously going through the whole hype cycle thing right now. But where are we going to be in 5 years? I don't know. What I would say is that if you think the pace of change is fast now, it's not slowing down. We're going to see more convergence of digital technologies. What NVIDIA, Intel, AMD, ARM, TSMC, SMC, blah, 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 blah. None of them are slowing down. Microsoft, Google, Amazon, Apple, they're not slowing down. How people are using the technology is not slowing down. So whatever you think, if you think it's going too fast today, in 5 years' time, it'll probably be a little bit faster. In terms of overall digital transformation, again, it's been there, done that, lots of t-shirts that it didn't work. Don't dismiss it. It's the only game in town in terms of we have reduced less skills. We have to free up people's time. We have to be able to react faster and digitalization is the game in town. But I suppose what I would say to people is that, look, people are out there running businesses today and trying to keep the lights on for what they're doing. There's so much going on in technology. So how do you keep up? Try and keep an eye out on, well, what is the art of the possible? So just as you can kind of see where it's headed, not going to be there tomorrow, but where are we headed? If we have this industrial metaverse, massive digital twins for your company and the supply chain and circular economy and whatever. So what's the art of the possible? But then be able to kind of game out for yourself quickly without getting into years and years of analysis. Well, what technologies would help us today? You know, what's the quick win? How do I start on that path? And this is back to, I typically ask people, well, like behind closed doors, well, where are you with digitalization today? And maybe you don't say it to the external person, but you have to be honest internally to go, look, this is where we think we are. And not that everything's, you know, happy, happy, joy, joy, and we're all brilliant. Because if everybody was, you'd be finished. So I think a bit of honesty and, well, what are the cultural changes? What are the workflow changes? And game that out. Get a couple of people in a room and go, well, what if we do this? What will really happen? And then come up with a plan as to what you can do that will help you, you know, crawl, walk, run. But I see so many people throwing, even today, just throwing a lot of money at a technology going, yeah, that'll fix it. And the culture and the workflow doesn't change. And then they're wondering why it's so hard. It sounds easy to say, right? But human nature hasn't changed. Technology is the easy bit. But change is what kind of us humans aren't great at times. And sometimes we think the technology is somehow magically fix it. Now, maybe AI will. The one thing I would say is where people say, well, we still have to get our data in order before we go to a digital twin or we go whatever, and that's hard. So if we don't fix that, we never can progress. Well, now a lot of people are looking at, can we use an AI to transform some of our data? Can it go look through the data and clean it up a bit? So I do think AI will be a solution to some of the traditional problems that we've had, where we said, I can't do this, it's too hard. Or it's going to cost me too much money. I'll have to get 1,000 consultants in for months to get all this stuff fixed. The AI might help with that. So that's where I'm optimistic that it's not the same problems anymore. We might be able to leapfrog some of the stuff. And again, this is where people have to game it out. But it's going to be an interesting couple of years. If you think it's fast now, it's like buckle up, you know.
No, exactly. Yeah, so I sort of agree with you as well. And the use of AI is more of a fix. It's not replacing, major functions, but it's actually just making some really, tedious or, expensive, let's say, problems a bit easier to resolve, I guess. And I see that. And then I guess that can be the enabler for other deployments of technology. But what we've talked about today is very important. It's that cultural side. There's no point having flashy new technology if you don't have the culture and the determination to adapt your way of working to incorporate that technology.
Yeah. Agreed. And again, I'd say to companies and whatever, is that you look at their leadership team and you see how they're adopting technology. And if they're very open to new technologies, and you can see that they're using different technologies and they're willing to try something and maybe fail and try something different. But if the tops-down culture is kind of same old, expecting everyone in your company to suddenly change overnight, that's a tough sell. And then this is back to the honesty piece, right? It's kind of that outside perspective in terms of, well, have you tried this before? And if it didn't work before, why will it work this time? Regardless of how much money you throw at it. So I think that's and then some companies, bigger or small ones, will adapt faster. But it's always been the same, right? We were mentioning earlier, when we look back 20 years ago, if you look at the big names in the IT industry back then, half of them are gone. and if you asked me 10 years ago, where would they be? I'd be like, oh, they'd be around for the next 50 years. Who saw that coming? So I think it's kind of evolve and adapt, or it'll go away, right? There's no guarantee for any company that you're guaranteed to be profitable in 10 years' time.
No, exactly. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Kevin, for your sort of time and sharing your expertise with us and the audience. I guess just before we go, how can people find out more about you and follow, sort of keep up to date?
The easiest, you can find me on LinkedIn. I will have a link somewhere. That's probably the easiest way. You'll find my email contact details and more information there and on a website and stuff about what I get up to. But it's a fascinating time.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll link to your profile, Kevin, in the show notes, so people can reach out to you. But for today, thank you again for sharing your expertise. I've learned a lot as well, so it's been great to chat. And I guess thank you to everyone else out there for listening as well. And we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks a lot. And thanks for the opportunity.
No problem. Thank you.
Please like and subscribe on all major podcast channels and find out more about Sensei Predictive Maintenance at Siemens.com.